What the fuck is this all about?
Punch!
Hadouken! 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 Hadouken!
Kyoryuken!
Oh, bitch, bitch, bitch.
What the hell do you think you are doing? Give me my book.
I'm sick of fucking hearing it, Joe. I'll give it back to you when we leave.
What do you mean when we leave? Give me it back now.
For the past 15 minutes now, you've been droning on about names. Toby. 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 Toby Wong. Toby Wong. Toby Wong. Toby Chung. Fucking Charlie Chan. I've got Madonna's big dick coming out of my left ear, and Toby the Jet, I don't know what, coming out of my right.
Give me that book.
Are you going to put it away?
I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want with it.
Well, then I'm afraid I'm going to have to keep it.
Hey, Joe. Want me to shoot this guy?
Shit. You shoot me in a dream, you better wake up and apologize.
You guys been listening to Cave Billy's Super Sound of the 70s?
Oh, yeah, man, it's fucking great, isn't it?
You believe the songs they've been playing?
You know what I heard the other day? Heartbeat, It's a Love Beat by Little Tony DeFranco and the Franco family. Man, I haven't heard that song since I was in the fifth fucking grade.
When I was coming down here, the night the lights went out in Georgia came on, I ain't heard that song since it was big. When it was big, I must have heard it a million trillion fucking times. But this is the first time I ever realized that the girl singing the song is the one who shot Andy.
Wait, you mean you didn't know that Vicki Lawrence was the one who shot Andy?
I thought it was the cheating wife shot Andy.
Yeah, but they said that at the end of the song.
I know, motherfucker. I just heard it. That's what I'm talking about.
You call me motherfucker.
I must have zoned out during that part.
All right. I'll take care of the check. You guys can get the tip. Should be about $1 apiece. And you, when I come back, I want my book.
Sorry, it's my book now.
Hey, I changed my mind. Shoot this piece of shit, will you?
From the 36 chambers, it's the Goose!
To death, woods on the right, wild for the night, monks in the back, come on in the track too.
The who is coming through, the outcome is critical, fucking with my style, sorta like a miracle on 34th Street, in the square of Harold, I gained Ella, the bitch caught a fits like Gerald, Dean Ferraro, who's full of sorrow cause the hope didn't win, but the sun will still come out tomorrow and shine, shine, shine like 09, here comes the drunk monk, with a quarter valentine, past the bone, kid past the bone, let's get on this mission like Indiana Jones, the jizza, one who just represent the Wu-Tang click, with the game and soul of an old school flick.
Hey everybody, this is Johnny Wu of the Wu's Mystery Box podcast. This is not my first podcast that I've ever done. It is basically my world. This is where I talk about shit I want to talk about, and I can say what I want because it's my podcast. And basically, this is my way of talking about news and stuff and things that are going on in the world where I can say whatever the hell I want and nobody can say otherwise. I have some social media outlets that I'll reveal to you guys later where if you want to provide some feedback, you're absolutely welcome to. But basically, this is my little window to the world for all of y'all, so that everybody can hear what I have to say and I don't have to worry about pissing too many people off. Johnny Wu is a nickname of mine. It's not my full name, as most of you guys, at least starting out, are going to know. Johnny Wu is something I was called when I worked in a restaurant. A good friend of mine coined the nickname and it stuck, and I figured I would go ahead and stick with it after all these years. So I'm still Johnny Wu, apparently. Basically, what I wanted to do is take little bits of my world from music, which I am pretty heavily influenced by, and video games and comic books and wrestling and things going on in the world in general, aside from entertainment, like news items, which is where we're probably going to start off. I like to call it more or less last week's news this week, where we've had kind of a chance to really digest what went on last week, and this is a chance to kind of talk about it because I'm more or less a week behind on the world events. And what I wanted to start off with is the Ebola virus, which is a pretty big deal. It's spreading pretty fast over in Africa. They're predicting that by January 20th of next year, there could be 1.4 million cases in terms of a worst case scenario. In terms of best case, they're saying that it should almost be ended because the disease dies off pretty quickly because it kills its victims off pretty quickly. I've got some clips that I wanted to play for you guys as well to kind of get a further, better understanding in terms of the Ebola virus and how it spreads and kind of not being overwhelmingly afraid of it. So let's go ahead and start off with that, if I know what I'm doing. We'll see. Play, damn you. You're not playing. You suck. This is not the first time it did it to me. Well, shit. Like I said, this isn't the first time that it's done this to me. Let's try this again. There we go. I think that's the missing component.
Who that kills you?
Yeah, here we go.
Hey D-Newsers, Trace here. Ebola is ravaging West Africa with over 1,400 dead and almost 3,000 infected. The outbreak is real and horrible. And though it is a terrible infection, it's not actually the virus. It's your immune system that's doing the killing due to a cytokine storm. But before we get ahead of ourselves, let me explain how we got here. Ebola, or EVD, was first identified in 1972. Two simultaneous outbreaks occurred in the Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Those two people were likely infected by...
Stop right there. His immune system sounds like it's going to kill him in a few years, by the way.
Fruit bats, and the virus was named for the Ebola River, which runs by the town in DRC where the virus was found. Today, the outbreak is happening in West Africa, 2,500 miles from the DRC, and it was probably moved there by fruit bats.
Fruit bats. This guy sounds like a fruit bat.
When a regular virus infects you, like the common cold, cytokines are created in response to send signals to the immune system. A cytokine is a protein produced by your body to send signals between cells. There are many different kinds of cytokines, and they're used by a bunch of your systems, including the immune system. The system then sends out dendritic cells, which eat the infection, learn about it, and then tell the immune system to produce antibodies, which stop the brothers of that virus from further infecting your body. When Ebola infects your body, it attacks those immune systems that launch the dendritic cells first. Without that dendritic instruction, the antibodies don't have any blueprints to use to combat the virus.
So basically, it's like Batman. It knows how to take you out before it takes you out.
Thus, Ebola replicates unabashedly, exploding cells and running wild, and eventually, the immune system throws everything it has at it to try and stop the infection. That is called a cytokine storm. The cytokine storm is like your body's version of DEFCON 1. All your body's defenses come shooting into your bloodstream. There are antibodies and white blood cells flying everywhere trying to destroy this infestation. But like global total thermonuclear war from War Games, it does harm the enemy virus, but neither side wins. To put it simply, due to the cytokine storm, the walls of your blood vessels become more permeable. Thus, blood and plasma leak into the surrounding tissue and sometimes out of the eyes, nose, ears, and it's taking Ebola with it.
Woof. That's a lot of blood.
In response to its own onslaught, your body then releases nitric oxide to try and regulate your blood pressure. But that nitric oxide damages the blood vessels even more, thinning your blood and dropping your blood pressure even further.
Oh boy, this sounds like a fun way to die.
This causes something like septic shock, or shock due to low blood pressure. As you probably know, Ebola is spread by infected bodily fluids. That includes blood, plasma, stool, and urine. But it also can spread through spit that might...
And semen.
Might fly during a conversation, sweat, and fluids that leak out of the body even after death. The World Health Organization says that it almost always spreads human to human, though it can be from infected meat. And it takes between 48 hours and 3 weeks before a newly infected person may show symptoms. They also say there's...
holy crap, infected meat too.
No vaccines and no proven treatments for Ebola. Though, it's important to note that infection isn't a death sentence. 47% of carriers survive. How does this make you feel about your immune system? Also, do you like War Games? Because that movie was totally awesome. We've got a comment section.
It was not awesome either. Anyway, so yeah, that's Ebola in a nutshell. That's sounds like fun stuff. Like I said, sounds like a fun way to die. Essentially, I don't think we really have much to worry about in terms of Ebola, due to the fact that, I don't know, it's an African thing, and by the time it gets over here, it's pretty much, we have effective techniques to deal with it. Here's another video.
This episode was proudly made possible by the all-new 2015 Subaru Legacy.
Blah, 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 blah.
It's not just a sedan, it's
I'm
a Subaru.
I'm not supported by
Ebola
Subaru.
Ebola has been making headlines lately, and if the hype is to be believed, we're all already dead. But if you're just mostly dead and want to know more, here are some common misconceptions about Ebola.
I'm mostly
clarified.
Dead. This is from
Hello,
Discovery
germaphobes
News.
Hello, out there. I'm Julian with DNews, and I have some info that might help you sleep a little better. First, let's douse the flames of panic and clear up that Ebola has not become airborne. It's adapted to survive and thrive in bodily fluids, and some pretty radical and unlikely things would have to happen for it to change its mode of transportation. It would need to develop proteins that could attach to the upper respiratory pathway, and its lipid membrane means it doesn't survive out of fluids. Because it's already doing just fine with its current mode of transmission, it doesn't have the need to evolve. So if you find yourself around Ebola patients, take comfort that at least the air you breathe isn't trying to kill you. These limitations help put another Ebola worry to rest. Industrialized nations are going to be able to stop the virus's spread much more effectively than the West African nations that have been hit. Knowing how the virus spreads means that we also know how not to spread it. Avoiding bodily fluids of the infected goes a long way, and casual contact with them isn't really enough to spread it.
So basically, the people in Africa don't know how to keep their hands or their selves away from other people that have it. They end up getting infected with it, which is why it's spreading like crazy. Because over here, what we would have a tendency to do is put basically the patients in a hot room and let them sit it out and wait it out while I guess they were treated for it medically. We're apparently going to be building some at least a hospital over there with 100 rooms. I mean, we're doing our part pursuant to President Obama, and considering we've had a few citizens of ours that have been stricken with it, I think that we kind of owe it to them because we've been hit by it too, just not to the extent that they've been hit by it. And since they live like a bunch of, you know, primitive people, they don't know what the hell they're doing, and that's on them. It's not that they don't have resources; they have resources. They just don't have the culture to go along with the resources, I would assume. So, Ebola, it's a big deal in Africa, not so much over here. We got a couple of cases, but we're better equipped to fight it. And by the time we deal with ours, it sounds like it's going to pretty much be a done deal over there anyway. So don't let the media's whole Ebola craze freak you out. Another great article that I came up with is, well, I'm just going to let the audio speak for itself pretty much, and then I will go ahead and discuss it a little further. And yeah, then we'll probably take a little bit of a pee break.
Oh, God. Oh.
Oh. Father of...
Let's take a second to guess what his... to guess what his malfunction is. What was that sound? We're about to find out.
Two, Dale Decker, suffers from a rare and seemingly incurable condition that leads to him suffering up to 100 unwanted orgasms a day.
Woof.
There's nothing pleasurable about it, because even though it might physically feel good, the whole time inside your mind, you're completely disgusted by what's going on.
You're completely disgusted with how your body functions.
And depending on where you're at, if you're in public, if you're in front of kids, if you're around strangers.
Well, now, buddy. Let's not let you in front of kids.
I mean, it can make a person break real fast.
But yet you're still with us.
The 37-year-old is the first man to ever speak publicly about the condition known as persistent sexual arousal syndrome, or PSAS, and he says it's ruining his life.
When you're on your knees at your father's funeral, at his casket, and you're saying goodbye to him, and then you have 9 orgasms right there, while your whole family is standing behind you, it just makes you never want to have another orgasm as long as you live. But you know what? You just keep on coming.
Literally. In the meantime, this guy's got tattoos on his knuckles, by the way.
Dale, from Wisconsin in America, was enjoying his suburban life in 2012 when he...
As opposed to Wisconsin in France.
He slipped a disc in his back while getting out of a chair, triggering the condition for unknown reasons.
They put me in the back of the ambulance to take me to the hospital.
And he came.
And on the way there, I had my first 5 orgasms. And
hard.
And they've never stopped.
Ever.
Dale has been unable to work since the accident and is mostly housebound through fear of experiencing an episode in public. But he enjoys playing frisbee golf with his closest friends.
Then he has the best time ever. Oh my God.
Oh God.
Here it comes.
They happen at all times in any situation. They happen when I'm awake. They happen when I'm asleep. They happen in the shower. I just had 9 rather powerful orgasmic sensations flow through my...
Oh my God. There's no way. He came once. It was just several different spasms.
My entire body. And now it feels like every muscle from here to about here is doing this.
I don't think so, buddy.
He's while the condition is so kind of rare, most doctors can't even diagnose it. It is widely acknowledged by specialists in the field.
PSAS is a condition of unrelenting genital arousal and spasms, which is not necessarily sexual. And they have no idea when this is going to happen or how often, and can lead to intense suffering.
And this suffering is felt in Dale's home life, where wife April struggles to cope with the situation.
We tend to have arguments about stuff that really shouldn't be argued about.
Now, her, I feel bad for, because she is married to this guy, and this guy is just constantly throwing spider webs, and she kind of has to deal with it, and you know damn well that it's taking its toll on their intimate time.
We already struggle right now. He can't work and help supply, so I feel stressed from that.
And PSAS is even a...
I don't see how this guy couldn't work. There's got to be a desk job he could do and have some kind of medical excuse. There's no reason why.
Affecting Dale's relationship with his children, Christian and Tatum.
They don't have a relationship. He doesn't go to, like, practices because he feels embarrassed and kids don't know about his condition.
Wrap it in so Kleenex.
The kids don't quite understand why Dale won't be there.
The threat of a spontaneous orgasm isn't the only thing that leaves Dale afraid to leave home.
Sometimes I have an erection for 3-4 hours at a time.
Often bonus.
They just come and go like 30, 40 a day. It's really hard to deal with.
Duct tape.
It's possible to have sex with my wife. We don't very often because it becomes frustrating because for me there's no end.
Desperate for help, Dale has turned to therapist Diane.
You eventually have an end, buddy. You had 9 playing frisbee golf.
It's destroying every part of everything in my life.
When it comes to sexual issues, people get very...
Here it comes. Oh, boy. And I promise you, it's not because of the way the therapist looked. Woof.
I've never seen anything like that before. There are no words.
He walked out.
It's hard to know if it's real. This makes me want to find him some relief. Otherwise, this is a horrible way for him to have to live.
It certainly is.
But even in the face of
horrible,
such desperate
yet
odds,
great.
There is hope for Dale's future.
It's very brave of Dale to come out and publicly talk about it. He's suffering, but there is help for him.
There's no doubt
he's
suffering. There are
doctors that can help him. So I hope that he's getting some help. I think the main problem is that probably nobody believes that it's a medical condition. They think it's in his head, and it's not. He's got a real medical problem.
I just try to take one day at a time. Hopefully someday, buddy will come up with something, because I would like to get back to my normal life one day and get back to being the person I'm supposed to be into instead of the person this has turned me into.
All right, so look, the guy's obviously got a problem. He's got a situation he's got to deal with. There's got to be something that can be done for the guy. The guy's got to be able to be snipped or something. I mean, I would assume you could snip him and it would do away with that. That's what they do with the child molesters in some states, isn't it? The castration. They go ahead and nip it in the bud, and then there's no more problems after that. There's got to be something that can be done for the guy. Just cut it off. Or something along those lines. I mean, they said it's from a spinal injury, but you would think that they would have things mapped out as to what areas of the spine were responsible for getting that communication to the brain. And you would figure that maybe they could put him on some kind of antidepressant or something that has some kind of sexual side effects that would help a brother out. So he could at least get a job. Get a jobby job. I do feel bad for the guy's wife because, you know, like he said, it's frustrating for him because he's, you know, they can go. It's not that they can't go. But his finishing is kind of selective. I kind of feel bad for the guy, but not really. I mean, there's got to be something he can do. You got to think outside the box with this kind of thing. If he's already got kids, there's no need for him to be having any more kids. And at this rate, they're not going to have any more kids anyway. So they might as well go ahead and snip those Johnnies and, call it a day, go from there, see where things lie after that. There are people with bigger problems. Okay. The burping guy that Howard Stern had on his show and that was all over the place there for a while. He burps every 30 seconds or so, uncontrollably. He's got a situation. He can't go out in public like that. Come on now. But if you got a little situation, you can hurry up and head to the bathroom. And like I said, if you got a doctor's note, you're out on TV now, buddy. You're on the intronets. You're viral. Everybody knows what your problem is now. So just go ahead and get a job and say, hey, this is my situation. I'm going to have to go to the bathroom every couple minutes. I hope it doesn't interfere too bad with this. I mean, you're not flipping burgers or anything out in public. So, all right. Well, we're going to go ahead and take a break for just a second. And then we'll get back to more stuff. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Woo's Mystery Box Podcast. We just got done with our little health segment with good old Dale there at the end. That was a problem for him, wouldn't you say? So anyway, I decided that we were going to kind of move away from that a little bit and move more into government-related matters. My first government, they kind of tie together a little bit of the health issues still. Apparently, there are some activists with anti-addiction group who are calling for the head of the FDA. They're calling for the head of the FDA on a platter. The head of the FDA, the commissioner, Dr. Margaret Hamburg, has been accused by these people of basically perpetrating a continual cycle of painkiller addiction by more or less kind of making it more, specifically making opiates more reasonably available. Or I don't want to say reasonably, kind of just more loosely available to people with quote-unquote chronic pain problems. And she essentially just, they went ahead and they approved this time-release version of hydrocodone, which is basically OxyContin and the Vicodin and the like. It's basically synthetic heroin. And it's a time-release version of it, which is not typically, well, it hasn't been available until now. And apparently these people feel it's bad news, the drug people, the anti-drug people, I should say. And I have a little bit of experience with this. My ex-wife is a recovering addict, and hydrocodone was her drug of choice because it dulled, she said it more or less dulled the pain of kind of losing her brother. Her brother passed away. He was a quadriplegic. And there were some situations that arose out of it. And it's one of the reasons why we're no longer together. And basically, I can see where these people would be concerned, because I could see, I know from experience how easy that stuff is to get a hold of. There are other parts of my family who have also suffered with addiction to basically the same stuff. And it's not good. It's just like I said, it's synthetic heroin, and it zonks you out like heroin, and you sit on your couch and you do nothing. And some people, that's good for some people. I'd rather have a couple beers. That way I'm not fully incapacitated in the morning or fully incapacitated at any point. But that's just me. So there's that. And that's something. This is the worst podcast ever. I promise. As we continue forward in this journey, it's going to be a lot more easy for both of us. The next thing that I wanted to put forward is a 60 Minutes piece about ISIS. We're going to go ahead and skip forward a little bit, I believe.
Right here across the bridge, you can see the black flag of ISIS flying over ISIS territory. To understand what ISIS is, where it came from, and how it blitzed through two countries, we went to the front lines to see where some of the worst atrocities in the history of terror are happening to innocents who are in ISIS's way.
I'm going to stop it right here. See, this is the problem that the journalists are suffering from. They're going over there. I understand wanting to get to the bottom of it by being in the thick of it, but this is why you're being beheaded. Because these people are crazy, and you're willing to go over there and get kidnapped by crazies.
Going for you, Barack Obama.
You'll hear from the soldiers who are battling ISIS, from a family that survived an execution by crawling out of a mass grave, and from this woman, whose sisters and mother have vanished.
Tell them I just want my mother.
What's being done to defeat the men who ride under the black flag? That's our story tonight.
Yes, this is the 60 Minutes piece.
Doing this?
Well, let's skip forward a little bit.
Kurdistan is semi-autonomous with its own military called the Peshmerga, With American air support, the Peshmerga are holding a tense front line against ISIS.
Yes.
Earlier this tense. Month, we started our reporting on that front line to explain ISIS, what it is, where it came from, and how it blitzed.
All right, Scott Pelley, let's move on with it.
In June, the leader of ISIS declared himself ruler of a new nation, which he calls the Islamic State.
Yes, that's the IS and ISIS.
Of course, no country on earth recognizes that state. But if it had a border, this would be it. These are Kurdish Peshmerga forces in northern Iraq. And right here across the bridge, you can see the black flag of ISIS flying over ISIS territory. All Muslims know what's written there in Arabic. There is no God but God.
It's basically a black pirate flag for all intents and purposes.
But the true meaning of this banner is written in blood. And it's up to another Muhammad, First Lieutenant Hazar Muhammad, to make sure the flag never crosses this bridge. Why is this bridge so important? This is the road to Kirkuk, he told us. The city of Kirkuk is 10 miles behind us, and it's the gateway to Iraq's northern oil fields. Do you have orders to destroy this bridge if it comes to that? No, Mohammed said. The people need this bridge. No one's going to take my bridge. But he couldn't have said that last month. In August, the Peshmerga were falling back, just 25 miles from their capital city, Erbil. The U.S. had stayed out of it for 2.5 years, but panicked leaders of Kurdistan called the White House, and that's what triggered the airstrikes.
You were outgunned.
We were outgunned, yes.
Mesrour Barzani knows ISIS better than just about anyone. He's head of Kurdish intelligence and the Kurdistan Regional Security Council.
I think everybody underestimated the strength of ISIS, especially with all the weapons that they seized from Syrian army and Iraqi army. 5 Iraqi divisions melted away, and you know, they just left their weapons, which fell into the hands of ISIS.
Weapons bought.
Now, this goes pretty much hand in hand with other reports that I've heard from radio shows that I've listened to. There have been soldiers that have called in and said that these people are essentially lazy. They want the benefits of the democracy of the country, but they don't want to do anything about it. And this is one of the reasons why killing off Saddam Hussein was a bad deal, because these people are religious zealots, a lot of them. And in their zealousy, they kind of listen to whoever the highest nut job is. And at that point, Saddam Hussein was the highest nut job. And the one thing that Saddam Hussein didn't put up with was assholes trying to take over his countries, or his country rather. And it's just absurd to me that we killed off the highest nut in that case, because relatively speaking, he may have been the highest nut, but he was the least dangerous nut to us.
By American taxpayers, he kept them focused by ISIS as it paraded into cities that had been won by American troops.
How many ISIS fighters are there?
There are perhaps 40,000 ISIS fighters who are carrying guns, fighting both in Iraq and Syria, maybe equally divided in two countries.
And how many people collaborating with them?
Well, collaborating, whether they believe in helping them or not, or out of fear, I would say over 100,000.
Where does ISIS get its money?
They generate their own revenues, and based on the information that we have, they generate something equivalent to $6 million daily.
That's a shitload of money.
By the selling of oil, wheat, taking taxes from people, ransoms, and still getting donations.
You talked about donations.
Many people who believe in this extremist ideologies believe that it's their duty to donate money to this organization.
And that's been coming from where?
Different countries, actually.
In the Gulf states?
Some in the Gulf states.
$6 million a day, that'll keep them going forever.
If they're not stopped.
If they're not stopped. And then I guess he just kind of gave Scott Pelley the hairy eyeball, like, bitch, you guys need to stop them.
U.S. airstrikes have stopped the advance, but black flags fly from northern Syria to Mosul, one of Iraq's largest cities. Now, more than 4.5 million people are ruled by something new, a 7th century vision with 21st century reach. In digital depravity, ISIS uploads its atrocities to strike fear far beyond the range of its guns.
Just stop that. We'll skip forward a little bit. It basically is talking about the propaganda videos that ISIS throws out there to make themselves look like a badass A-team of Muslim zealots. And that's what's sucking people in. So we'll skip forward a little bit.
Jordan, from the Mediterranean to Pakistan.
Baghdadi preaches Salafism. It is a tiny sect in Islam that calls for a return to the origins of the faith 1,400 years ago. But Baghdadi's interpretation injects lethal prejudice. Under ISIS, those who reject Salafism are non-believers, subject to execution. That applies to fellow Muslims and their mosques.
So the guy is the guy that's ahead, whose his name is al-Baghdadi, he's a Fruit Loop. He's a David Koresh. He's a Jim Jones. He's a guy that has these extremist beliefs within his religion, and that's what his religion's all about. It's like any religion, like any other freaking religion. You have your people who are moderate, who are realistic with the religion, and you have your people who are crazy with the religion. The people that are the crazies with the religions are the ones that are your beheading people. These are the equivalent of the people that bomb Planned Parenthood buildings or abortion doctors. People that are within their rights to their jobs, that are doing what they know how to do to make a living, and these are the crazy religious nutcases who are going ahead and ending that by any means necessary. Brr, 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 brr. They're crazies. They're freaking crazy, just like any other religion.
And it applies especially to non-Muslims.
What happened in your village when ISIS came in?
This is a poor girl. This girl, I'm going to skip. Again, I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. Her family was kidnapped by these crazies. They were put basically in a trench and left to die after they were shot. The men were. The women and the children were sent up to basically a holding cell. And she's been separated from her mother and I believe her sisters. She managed to escape at a key opportune time. Her brothers were shot, are healing from their injuries. I guess they played dead because they managed to survive the entire ordeal. They got shot up pretty rough, but they're still alive at least. Let's continue on.
He said, I saw through the window they're killing the men. I saw from a distance. But we take off our headscarves.
Took advantage of a blackout and escaped from the building. Now, all the family has of life before ISIS is this video.
It's a video of a wedding, and 95% of the people are dead.
I want them all to return, but most of all, I just want my mother.
Iraqi stage in 2011.
Back when you watched the Stars and Stripes being lowered for the last time in Baghdad,
this is Leon,
were you confident in that moment that pulling out was the right thing to do?
No, I wasn't. I really thought that it was important for us to maintain a presence in Iraq. The decision was that we ought to at least try to maintain 8,000 to 10,000 U.S. troops there, plus keeping some of our intelligence personnel in place to be able to continue the momentum in the right direction. And frankly, having those troops there, I think, would have given us greater leverage on Maliki to try to force him to do the right thing as well.
Nouri al-Maliki was the elected prime minister. He didn't want the U.S. troops. A paranoid man of the Shia sect of Islam, he nursed a grudge against the Sunni branch of the faith. He'd been a thorn in America's side for 8 years. President Bush, in an off-camera conversation with us in 2007, said that Maliki is a son of a bitch, but we have to deal with him.
I like that off-the-record reporting by Scott Pelley.
We had the opportunity to kind of hold all of this together. Just turned on the Sunnis, fed into the historical sectarian divisions that have marked that country for centuries, and basically undercut and undermined the security force in Iraq, and created, I think, the very ingredients that led to what we see today in Iraq.
So basically what we've done is we went ahead and killed the head crazy, Saddam Hussein, who was keeping everybody in tow because he was a crazy dictator. But you know what? At least while he was religiously motivated to an extent, at least he was power mad and not God crazy. He was power mad. He didn't want to be removed from that, from his office by hook or by crook. What we did was we went ahead and took him out of the equation, and we got these people over there who had no fucking clue what to do without somebody to lead them. They had no clue, no idea what to do without the lead crazy to head them in some direction and give them some level of things going on. So what's happened is these people have now had these other crazies, new crazies, who have said, you know what? We're the new crazy in town. We have this, and it's religion, and we're going to go ahead and we're going to kill everybody who's not us. And either you're with us or you're against us. And they're like, well, we're with you because we're sheep. We need a crazy to lead us in the right direction. And now it's spread. It's spread between two countries, between Syria and Iraq. And when all the hoopla in Syria was going on, we were too busy focusing on the rebels and thinking that it was in the name of a just cause because their leader's crazy, when in reality, he's in the same situation that Hussein was in. He's in the same exact situation where he's the lead crazy, and at least he's only power mad. He's not religion mad. He's not, we're going to kill all these motherfuckers that ain't us. And that's where our government more or less lose sight of things. They lose sight of things in that they want to see it as the spirit of America, the spirit of the Tea Party, take down the evil regime, but they're not noticing that what's taking down the evil regime is crazy and nutcases and just religious lost people, because they don't understand that freedom doesn't mean religion. Freedom means being able to do what the fuck you want to do, being able to say what the fuck you want to say without having to fear your government pounding in your door or your local crazy mosque pounding in your door and taking your head off, literally in their cases. I just think that this, I think that that stuff is what's going to lead us into World War III. That's just my opinion. I know that there are people who are Bible thumpers who will say end of days, Armageddon, Book of Revelations, yada, yada, yada. I don't really believe in any of that. I think that the Bible and religion was good when it was created because it was needed, because we didn't really have a firm grasp on science. And with science, you can more or less build your own morality around it in terms of social cues, what's good and bad. It's kind of bad to take somebody out in the middle of the street, take a sharp knife and cut their head off. That's not good. That's pretty bad. You don't really need a Bible to tell you that in the year 2014. So that's what I think about ISIS. Not that it's important. I should probably really do a better job of going into the next article that I have. The next article I have is our wonderful president. He addressed the situation in ISIS after this 60-minute piece ran. Our president went ahead and drew comparisons to the situation in Syria and Iraq with the situation that we recently had in Ferguson, Missouri, where the young man was shot down after. Evidently, he was also involved in a criminal act previously in the day of robbing kind of a, like I guess you would call it a 7-Eleven or a Shortstop in Delaware. But the guy had an altercation with a cop, from what I've heard and from what I can put together through things that I've read. He had an altercation with a cop, he and a friend. He may or may not have approached the cop in an aggressive manner. The cop may or may not have been fucking with him too by opening the car door. Either way, the boy ended up dead. The cop probably had just cause to shoot the kid, especially when you take into consideration that he was involved in a violent crime earlier in the day. They're both wrong. There's no right in this situation. The cop shot the kid dead. The boy was an aggressive hoodlum. They're both wrong. Both of them. Needless to say, the predominantly black population in Ferguson, judiciously so, I mean, you can't take it away from those people that they had the right to throw a protest. They went ahead and protested. They looted in the streets and demolished their own hometown. Hey, more power to you. You guys are mad as hell and you're not going to take it. You go ahead and destroy the town if you want. It's your town. It's you guys. Ultimately, you guys are the ones that look bad because you acted like a bunch of crazies. Anyway, Obama basically said that while we have our own racial and ethnic tensions, that over in the Middle East, it's to the nth degree, and we're going to go ahead and help those guys out. And apparently that's what we're going to do. We're going to go ahead and finally intervene in Syria. They're saying that the guy, I can't even remember his name, the Syrian leader who was just as crazy as Saddam Hussein, may have been planning this all along, that as long as he could hold back the insurgency, eventually it would flip-flop and he would be the lesser of two evils, and apparently that's where we're at. He's the lesser of two evils, which in my opinion is what he is. As long as in, 20 years we don't have one of Obama's daughters in office deciding to go back in, like we had with the Bushes. Anyway, it's just a hot mess over in the Middle East, like it always is. It's something that's never going to change, because the Muslims hate the Jews, the Muslims hate the Christians, the Muslims hate everybody. The Jews and the Christians are only tied by the fact that that Christ was a Jew. That's really the only thing that ties those two together. So they're more or less at a begrudging stalemate. Israel just wants their country, just wants their homeland, which after World War II, who can blame them? They were killed off en masse in Germany, so Germany obviously wasn't a place for them. And the Christians are more or less like, well, Christ was a Jew, so fuck it. The Muslims are just like, we hate everybody that's not Muslim, unless they're moderate Muslims, and then they're okay. They would prefer that everybody be Muslim. It's just a hot mess, and it's always going to be a hot mess as long as that area of the world exists. And anybody that says that whole part of the globe should just be nuked and vaporized, well, you know what? They think the same thing about us. So whose way of thinking is the right way of thinking in that? They believe that we shouldn't be here. We believe that they shouldn't be here. So, again, just like the Jews, we're kind of at a stalemate because we both more or less kind of have a point. They're crazy with the religion and want to behead all of us and want to turn us all into Muslims. We just don't want them to be giant assholes and fly planes in our buildings. Yeah, there's got to be something there. I mean, we have just as much bad as they say we have bad, and they have as much bad as we say they have bad. It's just a fact. They take their the extreme Muslims take their beliefs to the utmost extreme. But it's like I said earlier, the same thing with the extreme Christians. Look at your Westboro Baptist Church nut jobs. They're covered under freedom of speech, but if those assholes who have the God hates fag signs outside of the funerals that they stand outside of, if their job wants to fire them because they're associated with that church, guess what? Their job can fire them. That's not covered within the First. The First Amendment only pertains specifically to the government being able to shut you up. As far as your work being able to shut you up, as far as your family being able to shut you up, as far as other people being able to shut you up, guess what? That ain't against First Amendment rights. First Amendment only pertains to your federal government being able to shut you up. And that's just how it is. So all you crazies who are like, First Amendment, Second Amendment, Second Amendment, your government can't take your guns away, but you know who can take your government, your guns away? Your states can take your guns away. Your police officers can take your guns away. Your family members can take your guns away. Your job can fire you for having a gun if they want. This is the reality of the situation. You guys are covered under the federal government, and that's fine. I don't own a gun, so if y'all want to come in here and take my old-ass TVs that weigh 500 pounds and my 10-year-old computer that I'm recording this on that I don't even have internet hooked up on, you're more than welcome to it because I ain't going to shoot you down. But ultimately, these are the realities of the situation. Your federal government is not... Specifically, the right side. The right side is the first people to jump about the right to bear arms. But they also are the first ones to sit there and say, we don't want the government babysitting us. Well, which is it that you want? You want the government to cover your rights for guns, but you don't want your government impeding on your day-to-day business? Pick a side. It's just the reality of the situation. Well, anyway, we're going to go ahead and take us another break. So... I hope you guys are okay with my long-winded rants. Welcome back to Woo's Mystery Podcast, or Mystery Box Podcast. Wow, I really fucked that up. My next subjects that I wanted to talk about were... I wanted to discuss the new U2 album that was put on everybody's iTunes. Evidently, there are many people that are not happy that they received the new U2 album. I don't know, because to be honest, I didn't even look at my iTunes to see if it was there. I don't like U2. They're not one of my favorite bands. I don't think they've been relevant since post-Joshua Tree. But that's my opinion. I know that's not everybody else's. I know they had a big song on one of the Batman soundtracks, the one with Val Kilmer. I can't remember the name of it. Batman Forever? Basically, what Apple did was Apple basically put $10 million in their pocket and said, you know what, don't worry about it. We'll just go ahead and throw this on everybody's iTunes playlist. And there were a lot of people that were pissed off about it. And I mean, rightfully so, because I'm one of those people that I don't like U2. I'm not going to go out of my way to specifically listen to it just because it's free. I mean, I've had bands send me free albums before. One I just recently listened to, and it's not wholly terrible, but I need to sit down and really give it a firm listen. But anyway... There were a lot of rap artists that had come out and said stuff. Let's try and look for a specific quote here. I know somebody had a few quotes and a few tweets specifically highlighted, and now I can't find them, of course, because I'm the worst. Here we go. Tyler, the Creator, specifically said... Waking up with a free album on his iPhone was like waking up with a pimple or like a herpes. Fuck Bono, I didn't ask for you, I'm mad. Somebody tweeted, Macumbe is 12. He has to walk 8 miles for clean water. His iTunes account has a free U2 album. Please donate to help make this pain stop. Oh, it's $100 million worth of high-profile marketing for the album that Apple is providing. The Electronic Recording Association's Paul Quirk, who is their chairman, said that the apparent failure of this album, because he specifically called it a dismal failure, He said that it, quote, vindicates our view that giving away hundreds of millions of albums simply devalues music and runs the risk of alienating the 60% of the population who are not customers of iTunes. How can we really expect the public to spend £10 on an album by a newcomer? And it's a fact. But also part of that, though, I believe, and this is just my personal opinion, this is one of the things I wanted to address on my first podcast. I think part of it lies with the fact that there are no, that new artists are stifled. And essentially, the record company is suffering so badly from illegal downloads and, what you know, the many people, wink, wink, many people are guilty of illegal downloading. And, but it's because it's so easy to do. And to be honest, nobody wants, we were paying $10 for an album 20 years ago. Where's the decrease in value since there are more artists and the demand is going down? If the demand's going down, you need to start kicking down the prices so that maybe your demand picks back up. It's astounding to me that we're still buying albums at the same price that we've been buying albums for when there's so many more artists that are out there. There's so much more competition for our ears. There are so many other ways of finding music that you would think that specifically in album form, you'd see kind of a decrease in the amount of money that we should be paying per album. Now, every once in a while, you find Amazon Prime is good, or Amazon specifically is good for finding an album less than $10, specifically for what I listen to, because nobody else listens to it. Nobody listens to Cannibal. Well, there are people that like Cannibal Corpse, but they're specifically Cannibal Corpse fans. There are people that like the music I like. It's just not, it doesn't have the same breadth of popularity. So, anyway, I think part of it is that also music is kind of stalled. I mean, look at rock music specifically. Rock music, there are no decent rock bands that are just plain rock bands, because essentially there's nothing in rock music that hasn't already been done. Rock music is kind of, I think, I don't want to say it's died, but it's more or less lived out its life expectancy. Rap music has taken, rap and hip hop have more or less, at one point in time, had kind of taken rock music's place, and now it's more electronic dance music. Or even country music has more or less kind of picked up the, I guess you would say, picked up the baton and kind of run with it. Country is more or less the new pop. And I don't like country for the most part. I like older country, but I don't like this poppy new country. I certainly wouldn't buy it. I don't think that I would spend money seeing it in concert either. It's, music in general is, there's nothing to be excited about. I can't even think of the last time there was an album that I absolutely 100% had to get the day it came out, except for maybe the most recent Black Sabbath album came out, and that's because it could have been the last Black Sabbath album to come out. The last chance that I get to hear at least 3/4 of the original lineup of Black Sabbath on record together. I think that's the last thing that I really like sweated it out for. And I used to go to the record store every Tuesday was new record day. And I would be there bright and early in the morning because I worked at nights. And I would go faithfully every week and I would buy something new when I had disposable income. And then I had kids and that went away. So now I find other means of getting new music. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. So it's just a part of it is part and parcel with, you know, there's just nothing going on in the music industry anymore. There's nothing that's, the last real hype that an artist received was when somebody stumbled across Adele's 21 and somebody said, holy shit, this is good. And they started playing the hell out of it. And she sold a shit ton of albums. And I think she's one of the most recent phenoms in that respect, who is more or less kind of found footing. It took time for her to find footing. And I think that's another key thing with any form of entertainment, sometimes you find a sleeper hit, something that kind of sits dormant, maybe has a fervent cult base, but eventually finds footing with that one episode in terms of a show, or that one song in terms of an album, or that one trailer in terms of movies, where it just catches on and people go to it nonstop. I mean, there, every form of entertainment has its problems right now. And part of it is because nobody wants to spend money on it. And then, so since you don't want to spend money on it, everything you can find, if you're willing to search hard enough, and if you're willing to find enough loopholes, you can find anything for free on the internet. It's a fact. I can tell you that. You can find anything you want for free. And if you can't find it for free, you can find it for cheap and then fucking rip that shit and burn it onto DVD if you want. Everything, literally everything you can find for free if you search hard enough for it. You might get a virus or two, but god damn it, you'll have that copy of whatever the hell movie it is that you're into, that Harry Potter 7. You found it and you burned it on DVD. Now it's in your collection before it came out officially. It is what it is. I mean, you can find literally anything for free, and that's part of what's killing off the entertainment industry as a whole, is that you can find whatever the hell you want for free. Just a matter of stumbling on the right website, or a matter of stumbling on the right program, so that you can go ahead and download that one program and then just find a link on the internet and copy paste the link, and voila, you can have it in your own pocket. It's part of not having a hard media. It's part of having everything be digital nowadays. It's just how it is. And the entertainment industry cannot figure out a way to rightfully combat it. I think that it's kind of hard to combat it, especially when you consider how many people were buying Memorex tapes, either cassette tapes to record albums or to record songs off the radio, or people who are buying VCR tapes and recording whole series on VCR tapes. I mean, it's essentially the same thing, except for now you can do it on a much broader level. And I don't know if that's good or bad. If for people like me who just don't have the disposable income, it's a good thing, because I can stay in touch with the shit that my kids listen to without having to go out and buy it and waste my money on it. But because in my opinion, it's a waste of money. A lot of that stuff, that Justin Bieber or One Direction stuff, the stuff that my daughter likes, I don't want to have to spend money on that, because then if I buy that, I got to spend an equal amount of money on something that I actually like. But that's just my selfish way of thinking. All entertainment is screwed right now. I think the only industry that, one of the few industries that has successfully fought off piracy, is the comic book industry, and that's where I'm going to next. There was an article that I read in terms of the comic book world. DC Comics is coming up on the 30th anniversary of Crisis on Infinite Earths. For those of you that are not comic book nerds like I am, let me explain it to you. Basically, you have Marvel and DC. Those are your two big comic book companies. DC is owned by Warner Brothers. They were not at one point owned by Warner Brothers. Before they were owned by Warner Brothers, the concept that DC had was a multiverse, meaning it wasn't one solid universe where all the characters existed in one universe. You had an Earth 1, an Earth 2, an Earth 3, where you could have many different stories on many different planets with many different characters, some of which just have the same identity as characters on each Earth. Because you had, at one point, you had a Superman on Earth 1 and a Superman on Earth 2. Well, Earth 3 were evil versions of the characters on Earth 1 and Earth 2. Some characters were not shared. Dr. Fate was on Earth 2. Dr. Fate was not on Earth 1. Earth 1 had, like, there was a Hawkman on both Earths, which caused a huge hubbub when they decided to merge everything together, which is what Crisis on Infinite Earths did. Crisis on Infinite Earths was exactly that. They took the infinite amount of Earths that they had, because they seemingly had infinite Earths. I'm sure if you really did your research into it, you could actually number how many Earths they had back then. Well, what they did was they took all these Earths and they combined it into one. And throughout the years, they formed a relatively structured, even if it's kind of loosey-goosey, because you had characters like Hawkman, where there were more than one version, and they both seemingly converged into one version on the main Earth. At least with the Superman characters, you had Superman on both Earths, and more Supermen than just those. But the two main Supermen, the one from Earth 1 survived, the one from Earth 2 didn't. What he did was went away into like a pocket universe. It's all uber confusing. I know, you guys are lost and bored. You just want me to be done flapping my gums. Anyway, they combined all their Earths into one Earth. Then, later on down the line, there was kind of a Silver Age resurgence, where the characters had kind of evolved to a quote-unquote modern age, and what happened was they kind of reverted all the characters back to their old Silver Age identities. And then what they did was decided that they wanted to introduce a multiverse again. But they wanted it to be a limited multiverse. So they had an event to celebrate. I guess it was the 25-year anniversary of Crisis. Or the 20th year. I don't fucking remember. They celebrated one of the anniversaries of the Crisises. And what they did was they expanded back out to another multiverse. Well, now that it's supposed to be 52 specific universes. Well, rumor has it. And what they did was when they got rid of that, they streamlined the timeline. It had this event called Flashpoint, where they basically changed the Earth that everybody had known for years and years and years since Crisis on Infinite Earths. They changed everything about it. So they threw all of that previous history out the window, which is where I stopped reading it. I said, fuck this. My universe didn't exist. I'm out. Well, now they've gotten some spoilers where an Earth that's pretty goddamn close to the Earth that is my DC Comics universe Earth still exists somewhere out there. And since 30th anniversary of Crisis is coming up, it looks to me like they may be somehow reintroducing my interpretations of the characters, the ones that I love, the ones that I bought monthly books for when I was a kid. And that has me super excited. So that was long-winded. That was boring. I'm so sorry for boring you guys to death. I hope this was worth listening to you guys. The Twitter account, I believe, is at Woo's Mystery Box. I don't believe that there's an apostrophe between the last O in Woo and the S that makes it possessive. The email address is woosmysterybox@gmail.com. I'm hoping that I can get this up on iTunes. I believe I have done everything that I need to get it done correctly. So if you are listening to this and you are a buddy of mine on Facebook or a follower of mine on Twitter, please feel free to subscribe on iTunes. That is pretty much what I'm going to be doing for now. If you guys want to get a hold of me, drop me an email, send me a DM on Twitter. Hit me up on Facebook with a private message. Do what you got to do. If you have something that you want to plug, I have a cell phone that I can plug right into this here board, and I'll take your phone call. We'll just have to set it up ahead of time. I don't even know how frequent these things are going to be. I don't know if they're going to be frequent at all. I'm almost scared that you guys are going to say this was absolute horseshit. So if it was absolute horseshit, I greatly apologize for it. Thank you guys so much for listening. We're going to go ahead out on a song, just like we've been doing all day. Thanks, guys.
made clear in seconds of light. Disappears and returns again. Counting hours, searching the voice of the chill.